It's cool story, cool story. The Wheel of Time, the ultimate fantasy. It's cool story, cool story.
Hi.
Hi. What's going on?
This week was like a friggin' lightning fast, super busy week for me. I don't know about you.
A whirlwind, as some might say.
Yes, a veritable whirlwind. It's been a wild week. What about you?
Well, this is my final week in Chicago. Today is actually my final day in Chicago. Oh, so we fly out tomorrow, and I'm emotionally devastated.
I bet. How are you feeling?
Fine. You know, just sad to have it be over, but Miles keeps saying the stupid like Instagram post of like, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened.
It sounds very Miles.
Yeah.
Are you planning on making a return trip anytime soon for Iowa or anything like that?
Nothing planned right now. I did post on Instagram that if there is an anonymous benefactor who wants to rent an apartment for me between now and December. Because there is a, they announced auditions for an all-drag improvised Real Housewives show. And I feel like it's just so insulting for that to be happening the minute that I'm leaving Chicago.
100%. Hey, listeners, if there's any anyone who wants to sponsor N.
Honestly, just for the low, low cost of monthly rent in Chicago.
Yeah, go ahead and buy us a coffee.
Yeah,
buymeacoffee.com
for like $10,000. That's all.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think I'm really proud of you for doing that. That's such a brave thing you did, going out to Chicago and doing this whole intensive course. It's a not only the course, it's a different place. It's a different lifestyle for a while. So
yeah,
good for you. Really, I'm really, really happy that you did that. You've inspired me. You know, I want to do things when I can afford it. I don't have anything exciting that really happened this week. We finished Pose again. So Davey finished it for the first time.
Oh, my God.
Finally. So it changed his life just like I knew it would. Mm-hmm. and what else? We're just watching Housewives and the like.
Nice.
Oh, I did want to say one thing that I forgot to say last week.
Okay.
About the book. So you know the character Lelaine?
I do.
Duh, do you know the character Lelaine? You've read the books. You know the actress Lelaine? Or no?
No.
I don't think she's active anymore. Every time I read Lelaine, I think of the actress Lelaine. And the actress Lelaine is best known for her portrayal of Miranda on Lizzie McGuire.
Oh, does this person have a last name?
She just goes by Lelaine.
Oh.
I think it's spelled slightly different. I think it's an A instead of an E or something like that. But every time I read Lelaine in the book, I get a picture of Miranda with butterfly clips and
that's
glitter
really
hair. It's kind of hard to take her so seriously in the book.
That's really funny.
West Lelaine. Do you know Lelaine was written out? I guess it was her fault. I think she had like some sort of issue that Disney didn't like. Who knows if it's controversial or not. But she was written out of the movie.
Listen, I didn't even watch Lizzie McGuire, so knowing character on Lizzie McGuire is an absolute no for me.
Okay, I'll give you three things here real quick, and then we can move on. And they're quick. Number one, how dare you call Lelaine a B character? She was the star of the show with Lizzie. One of the main three. Number two, I can't even believe that I'm talking about Liz McGuire for so long for no reason.
Can't you?
And number three, how dare you talk about Liz McGuire in a negative light? Shaped everything. Didn't you see Hilary Duff cure homophobia?
I did. I have seen her cure homophobia.
She never would have done that without the springboard that was Lizzie McGuire show.
Oh my God, amazing!
Oh, that's all she wrote, as they say.
Well, shall we get into the book?
We do. We should. We do.
We got a lovely email. Let me pull it up really quickly. We got a lovely email from somebody named Joseph.
Yes, and before you get into that email, can you remind the listeners of the other email we got? I feel a little badly because we spoke about the email in the ending, and I don't think everyone listens to the ending, so I want to make sure she hears her name on here.
If you're not listening to our endings, you're only getting half the story.
That's right. They're live every time, and they're different.
They're different every single time. But yeah, we got a lovely email from a listener from Ukraine named, I'm going to say Ola. It's O-L-H-A.
Mm-hmm. That's what I would say too.
And they're currently, like, I think on maybe season 2 of the podcast. So they're playing catch up and they won't hear this for a while, assuming they don't get tired of us and give up.
Along the way.
But lovely email from them. And we talked about them in last week's closing notes.
I
Is that right?
So yeah.
Okay.
Last week or the week before.
And then we got a lovely email from Joseph, who has a really cool last name that I won't say because I don't want to just give out people's last names on a wildly popular podcast. But they had recommended, or they wanted us to talk about the trailer that dropped, and also gave me recommendations for some star, not me, but us, recommendations for Star Trek shows. So I've actually been watching a little bit of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and I'm probably 5 episodes in at this point, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. It's good. Star Trek, generally, like, I'm trying to think. Like, Star Trek has always felt ever so slightly, like, hokey to me, and not in, like, a bad way, just in, like, a, you know, we always want, there's always, like, a little bit of a, like, a moral to the story kind of mm-hmm. episode sort of vibe.
Yeah.
And that definitely has continued into this, but I like it and it's fun.
Nice.
The other one is Lower Decks, which is the animated Star Trek that I haven't checked out yet, but I plan to.
Oh, I've actually heard about that one before.
Yeah. And then...
Oh yeah.
So the trailer.
Yeah, the trailer.
Thoughts?
Oh my gosh, I wish I had watched it in preparation again. I've watched it many times already, so
same.
Let me see if I can call back. I don't know if I'll be great at like scene by scene type stuff here, but it was very exciting to see the trailer just in general because I haven't seen anything. I still haven't watched the episodes from the bonus.
Oh, you
scenes.
Haven't watched the little behind the little season, whatever it's called, at the end of episode 8?
No, not yet. I keep saying we're going to watch it, and me and Davey keep forgetting by the time we go to watch it, because he wants me to wait for him. I might just watch it and watch it again with him. but it was like the first thing I've seen. I mentioned this, I think, in the other one. It looks like they've changed some of the special effect type stuff.
Yes, channeling has gotten an upgrade.
It looks better, I think.
It does.
And yeah. I didn't have such a problem with the channeling either. I actually didn't really have much of a problem with the channeling in the first season, but
yeah,
I think it looks better overall. I think it looks, I think they changed Perrin's eyes for the better. It looks like to me, I mm-hmm. really didn't like Perrin's eyes in the first one. And
yeah, I think they had to like overdo it to make it evident what was happening.
Yeah, I think, well, I don't think they had to, but I think they did.
Okay. All right.
And what else? I liked seeing all the scenes. What was the scene we saw with, Egwene
and Elaine.
Have you watched it recently?
I just scanned through it quickly again on my phone.
Okay. As I'm looking, any thoughts of yours?
The Shanshan look amazing. I can't wait to see them. They
yes.
seem very scary. And the costuming on them is just amazing.
I think it looks so cool. I'm really interested to see how it all works. Like how their version of the Adam works and what it really looks like in full and how that's all going to look. Really curious about that. I think that the scenery, like the settings that they show in the trailer, look really beautiful.
Yeah, agreed.
The scene of there's someone covered in like, are they covered in blood?
Blood, yeah.
What do you think that is?
People think that is Lanfear emerging from the seal.
Oh, interesting. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm wondering. Okay, they showed the room with the accepted test, it looks like. And the Tarangriel doesn't look like I expected.
Oh, really? That's how I pictured it.
It looks like stone.
Well, I guess I mean the shape is how I pictured it.
Yeah, it looks a little different than I expected, than I was imagining in my mind, I think. I was thinking of it as like thin metal sort of arches.
Yeah.
You know? I like it though. It caught me off guard because it is not at all what I'm expecting it to be. I'm hopeful for the new Matt. He looks great.
He does.
I just got to the part with the Shang-Chan. They just look so good. I know they do. The bad guys, but they just, the costuming, the vibe overall, I'm really interested to see what that is going to look like. Because, you know, we just got a taste last season. And it looks like there's some flashback scenes with Moiraine and Swan.
Yeah, there. Some people seem to think that there's going to be...
like a new spring...
yeah, some kind of new springy type, I was about to say throwback, flashback.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then there was the moment that I was thinking about with Egwene where you were saying you think it might be the moment she gets collared.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking of. I will say this about the trailer overall. I'm super excited, so I was really, like, very excited to watch it. I think I felt more excitement for the trailer for the first season when it came out.
Yeah.
I guess that's because it was brand new and stuff, but...
yeah, there was so much, like, hype. What's everybody going to look like? What's that going to be? And I still have that, but, like, there was a true frenetic energy for season one for me.
Yeah, with this one, you know what it is? I'm also very curious about what they're going to do. So seeing all these, like, little flashes, I'm like, I want more.
Yeah.
I want more. What else are you going to show me? This isn't enough to give me what I want.
I don't think I told you that we found out that they're dropping the first three episodes on the first day.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Good. So I don't know how we want to handle that, but...
didn't they do something similar last time?
I think they did the first two.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited. That means
speaking of which...
that's coming in early September, so that's to come. And before I forget, there's another scheduling thing I want to remind or tell everybody about.
Yes, I was just going to bring that up.
Oh, yeah. So this week we're on. Next week we are off. I'm going to be out of state next weekend when we record. So I won't be able to record, unfortunately. So we're taking one more summer week off. My final summer. Hurrah. And we'll be back the following Thursday. So that is, let's see. This is coming out on the 17th. We'll be taking the 24th off and we'll be returning on August 31st.
Yeah, so I guess we'll just have one more Lord of Chaos episode before we get into the show episodes.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be like a nice moment to, you know, button up where we are.
Yeah.
And get ready for the show, which very, very excited again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now let's get into the book.
Fine. Okay, so my chapter is chapter 9. It's called Plans, and the little icon is the white cloak sunburst thing. Yuck. And the chapter, let me tell you, I don't know how much of this is important to the storyline, so I skimmed some of the inner dialogue of our Pedro Nile.
Okay.
He has a lot of planning. This is a chapter where Pedro Nile has a lot of inner dialogue and a lot of inner thoughts about what's going on, who goes where. I imagine him standing over a huge map in his mind, moving little risk characters across it, figuring out who goes where. And that's just not my forte.
In Clarissa Explains It All, was she doing a video diary? Was that the format of her diary?
Oh, she did a lot of things on video, though. I don't think the format of the show was a video diary. I think she was just, like, breaking the fourth wall and talking to people. But okay. She did have a video diary component to the show because they always incorporated her computer.
Yes.
It was the 90s.
And she always had some kind of like weird programmy game thing happening. Yes.
She would program games a lot that were like her fighting her brother.
Yes.
Ferguson.
Oh, Ferguson.
Stop. I had a little crush on Sam back in the day, you know?
Oh, yeah. Same.
Who didn't want like floppy haired cute boy from school climbing into your window? I mean, 100%. If you want them to, I guess. All right. Well, listen, Pedro Nile, he's not
explains
in,
it all.
Pedro Nile explains a lot to himself. Where with him, he's chastising one of his officers named Omerna, who is telling him that he let in some illuminators, or he wants to let in, he just recently let in some illuminators into Amador. And Pedro Nile's like, we're in a lockdown. We're not letting anybody in or out. Why would you do that? And we learned that this man, whose name is Abdul Omerna, that's how I'm saying it, he is the sort of like spy master for the White Cloaks. And I guess he's explaining it all. He says that this was intentional. I let the Illuminators in on purpose because, you know, Illuminators travel everywhere. They can get access maybe to spaces others cannot, and maybe we can use them to our advantage and think about it. And Niall is like over it from the jump. He's like, no, this is dumb. They argue back and forth a little bit, even though it's not much of an argument because Petronell's in charge. But, you know, he's trying to get his way and he forbids it. And so he says, that's it. They're going to be escorted out just like everybody else. On to the next thing. And he's like, all right, fine. So he tells him, here's some news. I found out that there are Dragonsworn gathering in numbers in Altera and Murrindy. And he says that, you know, we should probably make a move soon. But Petronile silences him. He wants none of his advice. He's just here to get information. So he's like, next. He's not into this guy at all. Mm-mm. Which, you know, I was getting frustrated with, like, Omer. Like, I'll tell you when it happened. But okay, I found myself sort of siding with one of the White Cloaks and feeling bad for them. And I was like, wait, these are White Cloaks.
Yeah.
So he's like, okay, tell me what else you found out. And he says, well, Matin Stepanos. Can you remind me who this is? He's a noble of some sort, I'm guessing. A king?
That's Samael in Ilion.
Bastard. Thank you. That contextualizes a lot. Because I was like, I know this name, but is he just like a random noble? Because I'm hearing all of these millions of names of cities and their kings and nobles. It's very hard for me. So he learns that Matin Stepanos. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
That's how I'm saying it.
I think that's all how I've said it. I think.
I guess it doesn't matter so much since it's Samael, ultimately.
Just kidding. He is the king of Ilion, but Samael is, you know, in charge there.
Oh, okay. Okay. But he's Samael, like the figurehead sort of king, right?
Yeah.
Who doesn't really matter?
Yeah.
I thought that rings more of a bell. Okay, so he learns he's probably ready to join him, but Niall shows only mild interest in this, and he asks for more information. All he finds out is that there's, you know, many more, like, noblemen and royalty or whatever who are seemingly in his pocket and would take his side if they wanted to, you know, rebel against Rand, so to speak. And that Rand's popularity and everything is sort of hitting a plateau. He's not making any moves. He's up in Camelin just chilling. Who knows why? And, you know, this is good, maybe, for the White Cloaks. And then there's a lot of text about how this spymaster is actually super gullible. He's not really the best at his job because he believes every rumor he hears, like, outright. And that seems like the opposite of what you'd want from a spymaster. So that's when I was thinking, oh, I kind of feel bad. They have, like, the worst person in charge. Like, he's got, like, kind of a shitty guy doing stuff for him. He's gonna get all the worst information. And I was like, wait, these are White Cloaks, I don't care. And then later it didn't even matter. But so he is super gullible. He's been over this from the moment he came in here, and he's like, okay, I've heard enough from you. And he kind of dismisses him, and he's like, send in Balwer. So he sends for Balwer, and I'm thinking, like, if this guy's a spymaster, he's really dismissive of him. Like, you could tell he really didn't even barely care about anything he said, but...
Literally.
Yeah, so I was like, this is such a weird dynamic. Is Niall just, like, a total maniac, D-bag? He just really doesn't care about even his, like, people in command? But then we find out pretty shortly afterwards that Balwer is the actual spymaster. He's, like, way more unassuming. He's, like, a scraggly kind of guy, and no one would suspect him of anything. So he's really the spymaster. Oh, Myrna is, like, a decoy. So
Oh, Myrna.
So he comes in, and he seems way more sinister. He seems way more good at the job, unfortunately. And he says, you've summoned for me, like, what's going on? And he asks him, like, I want to know what you think. Do you think that whoever blows the horn of Valyr, do you think that the, you know, troops will come back from the past and fight for them? And he's like, I'm not sure. And he asks him some other questions, and he's like, I'm not really sure. He asks him the same question. Do you think that Matin Stepanos will follow suit? Do you think he'll actually follow through and be on our side? And he says he's not sure, but he has heard that he's made some sort of agreement with the White Tower, so that's happening. He says that he's also heard that Devran Bashir is in Camelin with a bunch of troops, And, like, he's heard that the number's been inflated, but still, you know, something to think about. And then RJ writes, on the surface, everything seemed to be going Althor's way at the moment, except for whatever held him in Camelin. But Niall had always been at his most dangerous when he was outnumbered and with his back to the wall. And I really hope that is not true or foreshadowing, because it just kind of seems to me like the White Cloaks don't really have anything right now. but I just feel like there's too much talk of them to write them off. So I'm a little concerned. He thinks this is a part where he's thinking long and hard about the nations that he currently feels like he has in his pocket or on his side, or mm-hmm. who he thinks he can sway his way with a little help from Carradine. Where is he right now? He's by the... I forget where he's out. He's out there...
causing trouble.
Causing trouble. but he has some sort of influence where he is, and he has a little bit of trust in him. Not much, but some. And yeah. he thinks that with whoever Carradine can rally, even if it's not much, plus the White Cloaks they already have, like, on their side, he's very confident that they can create a rebellion against Rand. And I don't even think he likes to think of it as a rebellion, because he doesn't look at Rand, obviously, as, like, a dragon or anything.
Yeah. But
he thinks he can basically create a rebellion among the Dragonsworn, or anyone who's on the fence, against Rand in most places where he has a stronghold. And that it's basically inevitable at this point that that's going to happen. He thinks with Bulwer's help, he's already sort of started the process of conspiring with people and turning a few people against Rand. So
yeah.
he feels confident. I forgot to mention this. Before he let Omerna go and summoned for Balwer, Omerna had some sort of, like, little scrolled up letter that was sent for him, that was specifically for him.
Yes.
And he has that letter in his hand now, and he's like, okay, I'm going to read it now, even though I have company. He opens up the letter, and the writing is in, like, a cipher that only he would know. It's from one of his best agents in the land, a man who last he heard was in Tanchico, as he's, like, a rug seller or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't heard from him in so long, like a year, so he thought he actually died. So he was like, what's this? And he's kind of disappointed because it's crazy talk. It's a letter about men riding beasts, flying creatures, and Aes Sedai on leashes. It also mentions the Hylene, which is forerunners in the old tongue, and he seems very afraid of this. And Niall thinks, scrawlings of a madman.
Yeah.
Crumples it up and throws it over his shoulder. And then there's that moment where I imagine, like, it silently hits the ground, and both he and Bulwer, like, avoid looking at the crumpled up piece of paper. Because mm-hmm. Bulwer is really curious what's on it. And Niall, who previously didn't care about it, is like, oh, well, I don't want him to get it. So there's this, like, awkward moment of, like, no one's getting that paper. Bulwer says, I have four more pieces of knowledge. Very specific. He says that he knows that the Ogier have been meeting among settings, it seems like, and hastefully, which is not like the Ogier to be hasteful.
Yeah.
And they're secretive, so he doesn't know much besides that. He knows that there's seafolk ships that have been gathering in southern ports with seemingly no purpose and kind of lingering around, which we've heard from other people as well. Rand has been reported being seen in multiple cities that are very far apart on the same day by reliable sources, which we know how that's happening. But Niall's theory is cloning or doppelgangers.
Right.
And lastly, that just shows how little they know about the Aes Sedai, that he thinks that he could be cloned. Or it could just be an Aes Sedai made someone look like him. I mean, I guess maybe they could do that. Maybe.
Yeah.
I wonder if that is a weave where you could... Oh, well, actually... No, that's a Forsaken. Is that something Aes Sedai could do? Do we know? Do we know yet?
We don't know if any of the Aes Sedai can do it, but we do know that some of the Forsaken know that
trick. Yeah. Interesting. I just thought about that. So maybe it's not so crazy. But that's Niall's theory. And the story... The last piece of information is the story about the Rhett Aja creating Loghain's, like, whole narrative, bad guy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm unsure, personally, as a reader, if Balwer believes that or not, or if he's just relaying that that's a story that's being told. I don't know if it's clear or not, but...
Well, I mean, they write that Balwer is kind of, like, he doesn't believe anything, really. He's kind of like a a constant skeptic, which makes him perfect for the spy role. Master job.
I guess they also said he doesn't even believe necessarily in Black Aja or things like that even, you know? So I guess he's skeptical about as he said, and that's why it sounds that way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Niall sits with this information, and he thinks about how he could maybe take advantage of this if this is true with the Red Aja, because that would mean that there's like a split in the tower. And he says that he thinks that this would be a great time to strike against the witches and Althor at the same time, possibly. And then he says out loud that it is true. The Black Aja has risen and left what he perceives as the losers to lick their wounds in Salidar. He thinks that most people will always view the tower, the White Tower, as the real Aes Sedai, no matter what. That's just going to be the common belief. And if it's true that they're infested with Black Aja, that only works to kind of prove the White Cloak mindset about Aes Sedai in general and them being dangerous witches. It'll just show that they are the ones to follow. So that works for them. And then he goes on to suppose about why the Tarvalon witches are in Salidar. But he doesn't really have an idea of what that reason is yet. He kind of ran out of steam. And Balwer suggests maybe they're there because they want to repent and follow the light. You know, maybe they've changed their ways. Mm-hmm. And Niall practically does like a spit take and is like, preposterous, outrageous. But Balwer's like, that's kind of the point. Because if it's preposterous for us, the more absurd gossip is, the faster it spreads. So, you know, maybe that would be a good piece of gossip to get around. Mm-hmm. And Niall's like, well, how? I'm not doing that. And Balwer's like, I got a plan. And he says, quote, I suggest four rumors, my lord, not one. The first, that the division in the tower was caused by a Black Aja uprising. The second, that the Black Aja won and controlled the tower. Third, the Aes Sedai in Salidar, repelled and horrified, are renouncing being Aes Sedai. And fourth, they have approached you seeking mercy and protection. For most people, each will be a confirmation of the others. And Niall's like, great, I approve of that plan. Mm-hmm. And he's like, by the way, lastly, Elaine and Gawain are to be brought to me. So make sure that is clear and out there. And then Balwer says, may I make a suggestion? He's like, barely. He says, I suggest pressing Morgaze harder. She's been here a while. She's very wishy-washy. And Niall's like, I got it. Be patient. Can't try to come in hot. And he's like, get out of here. I'm fine now. And he sends him out. And there's a quick perspective switch to Morgaze. And correct me if I'm wrong in any of this. It was a little hard to follow where she was. But It seemed as though Morgaze was with her, like, little consort of people. It's just Basil Gill and Peter. He's that kid that went up to her recently and was like, we want to protect you, right? And he's like, yes. Not to be trusted.
Yeah.
So she's with the two of them. And they're hawking?
Yes, they are hawking.
Hawking. So they're out. Does that mean that they're just, they're the ones doing the hawking too? They're watching people do, like, what does that even mean? Going hawking. I've only seen it at a Renaissance festival.
Yeah, I think basically they're hunting and using hawks to do it. So,
and she's part of it? Like, she's...
Yes.
Okay, fun. And this is just, like, to entertain her while she's here at the palace or whatever with the White Cloaks, right?
Exactly.
And she's surrounded by not other people, like, of her same stature necessarily, but just other people of the palace who want to be her ladies-in-waiting?
Yeah, kind of like other minor nobles of the area.
And they're just accompanying her, or do they view themselves as all on this trip together as equals? I'm kind of unclear about what is her role here.
She's
like the guest of honor, kind of?
Kind of, yeah. Like, it's basically, you know, these minor nobles are sort of there to attend to her and, you know, entertain and spend time with her.
Okay. She doesn't seem interested in any of it. She's just going along with it just to be here because she's still figuring out what she wants to do.
She's kind of like being held by the White Cloaks. And so this is all sort of like
a facade to make it look like it's not being held.
Exactly.
Fun. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. I need a little more context. I was having a little, I kind of got the pieces up, but not all together. So she's, you know, out here on this hawking trip. Against her will with all of these random ladies in waiting. A few of them are fanning her and saying, oh, you must be so proud. And she's like, oh, yeah. And they say, you know, Galad is a White Cloak now. You must be so proud. And this is a reality she just found out like the night before that she's still grappling with personally. She worries for all of her kids and worries for Galad as a white cloak especially. But she thinks it might be to her advantage if they think she favors her other children and like pretends like that because he was from a previous marriage with of convenience or, you know, circumstance, he's just, you know, whatever. So she says he's free to do whatever makes him happy. And, you know, ultimately Gawain and Elaine are heirs to the throne. So, you know, everything's fine. And then one of the women, her name is Mirandi, I think. But that sounds like a place, so maybe I shouldn't say Mirandi.
Well, I pronounce the country Mirandi.
Okay. Maybe I'll start saying Mirandi so I can say Mirandi, even if she's not really like a main character. But right now she's a little bit mean. She's one of the older women of the group that's there with her, and she is the more brave in how she speaks with more gaze, a little more brazen.
Yes.
She says she barely gives more gaze time to answer her questions or to converse with her, but she basically is like, I've heard that Rand is giving amnesty to men who can channel that false dragon. I hear that he displays the Lion Throne kind of like a trophy. I hear that, and Morgaze is like, you really hear a lot, huh? And she's like, sure do. I also hear that Rand talks daily with Andorran nobles. And this very uncomfortable moment where she's really pressing Morgaze to get under her skin, or to try to get under her skin, it seems like, it's interrupted by the falcon guy, falcon handler, who's like, you want to do some more falconing? And Morgaze is like, no, but let's go back. And she's like, thank God. And they all kind of start heading back to Amador. And on the way, there are a lot of folks on the side of the road and the path that look downtrodden and sort of like they haven't been eating. They're dirty. They look sad. And she's like, what is going on? So she asks a white cloak, Norwin, if these are refugees. And she finds out that they are, he says, but of the dragon, basically, that they are people who believe in the false dragon and look at what becomes of them. It's like a plague. They abandon everything. They leave everything behind, and this is what's become of them. And Morgaze looks at them and like sunken in cheeks and eyes glazed over and whatever she perceives them to look like and thinks, oh my God, if this is happening here, is he doing this in Andor too? And she thinks, is getting the White Cloaks involved against Rand, like, which is the better of the two evils anyway?
Right.
She swears to herself to make Rand pay for this. And then that's the end of my chapter.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. Lots of planning, lots of thoughts, lots of unclear motivations.
Schemination.
Schemination.
Well, my chapter 10 is called A Saying in the Borderlands, and the sigil is the dragon. So we're back with Rand. And he is walking through the palace of Caemlyn, wishing that his life didn't involve an escort of dozens of Aiel and Saldan soldiers and bowing servants everywhere he goes. And he's just wishing for a simpler time.
Wishing and hoping.
And praying. And thinking. I don't remember the lyrics to that song. But at least he thinks LTT's voice is not yammering in his brain today. Bashir is filling him in on current events, including that some of the Dragonsworn in the city are causing some kerfuffles that, like, if somebody is found to be, like, speaking against Rand, then the Dragonsworn will either, like, beat him up or recently they, like, hanged, either way. If they speak against him. And this was for somebody who had laughed about Rand's quote-unquote miracles. And Rand is like, miracles? And as he says this, a servant kind of like comes around the corner and is holding a seafolk porcelain vase, which they drop in surprise. And instead of shattering it, like, tumbles end over end down the hall before landing upright and in perfect condition. And Rand is like, oh yeah, okay, cool, I get what you mean.
That kind of stuff, huh?
That kind of stuff. And Bashir and Bael, the Aiel chief, talk about some of the more positive strange occurrences, like a basket of roof tiles that fell from a roof and landed in the shape of the Aes Sedai symbol. But Rand knows that for each of these sort of like positive miracles, there are just as many that harm people just by the factor of him kind of like being around and altering Chance because he's Taveren.
Mm-hmm.
So Rand orders Bashir to find the men who did the hanging and to arrest them for murder and to spread the word that just doubting him is not a crime. So the Dragonsworn should stop beating up and killing people. And Bashir is kind of also filling him in that some of the nobles who had fled after Morghaes banished them or like Ravan, you know, did some shit to them or whatever, have kind of started to return, including Ilorian and Pelivar, and Lady Dailin is in the country nearby, but none of them have responded to his invitations for a meeting.
Rude.
And very. And Rand is like, okay, well, Bashir, go invite them. And he's like, I don't think that, like, Saldaean general is the right person to send for, tea invite. And so Rand decides to send the Lady Arimilla, who is, you know, eager to please him, he thinks. So Bael also informs Rand that there are two Aes Sedai who have taken rooms at an inn in the city. And Rand is like wondering why they could be there and if they know where Elaine might be. And he's kind of like, maybe I should meet with them, and thinking like, I could probably handle two fully trained Aes Sedai. And just then LTT's voice pipes up for the first time that day and is saying that he's like too full of pride. And Rand is like, I don't like that. One, because he had been quiet all day. And second, because it's like too directly a comment on Rand's train of thought.
Yeah.
So he's not a fan of that.
No.
He spots Avienda sitting ahead at a fountain and he stops dead and is like, you know, I think now is the perfect time to go visit those Aes Sedai at the end. It could be important. And a couple of people like give him little like side looks like, sure, that's what this is about. And two of the maidens continue walking toward Avienda. And Rand says that all of the maidens will come with him, and anyone who wants to put on a dress and discuss matchmaking can stay behind, which gets some furious looks from those two maidens, but laughs from the rest. And Rand kind of wonders if he's finally learning Aiel humor. So they head through the city and Rand kind of like surveys some of the, you know, patterns in the city, similar to what Morghaes had been seeing of, like, you know, some people in like less than fabulous circumstances. And when he finally gets to the inn, he is stunned to see inside that the inn is full of, you know, not your usual demographics of patrons, but instead it's full of young women and girls. And not only that, but he recognizes a bunch of them, including Bodhi Cawthon, Matt's little sister. And there's kind of a moment where it's like, Beyonce? where they're like all sort of shocked to see each other. And they kind of gather around him and tell him they're on their way to Tarvalon and fill him in about, you know, Lord Perrin and his marriage to Faile and the Trolloc attacks and the White Cloaks and, you know, how much the Two Rivers has changed. And they start filling him in on some of that. And Rand is kind of like, you know, surprised to hear all of this. And they're all sort of talking at the same time. But before Rand can get many details, a voice from across the room says, "We will not be going to Tarvalon just yet." And Rand looks over and sees Alana and Varen, along with their warders. And Rand, he kind of speaks a little bit not deferentially enough, according to the, Two Rivers girls, to be respectful of Aes Sedai. They're kind of like, manners, Rand, like, who do you think you are? But he asks Alana and Varen if they know where the Aes Sedai are that oppose Elida, because he says, you know, I have reason to believe that they, well, first he just says, do you know where they are? And Alana says, well, there are some things we should discuss in private. So they go to the private dining room of the inn. And Rand immediately asks them if they'll be taking the girls to these, you know, so-called rebel Aes Sedai. And Varen says, well, you seem to know more about that than we do, because we only heard of those events in Whitebridge. And he's like, well, I just want to know because I have reason to believe that they might support me. And, you know, also he thinks that that's probably where Elaine is, and he wants to, you know, get her on the Lion Throne.
Mm-hmm.
So Alana says that if the rebel Aes Sedai decide to support him, you can be sure they will seek you out in their own time and not on your schedule. And Rand is like, okay, great. Fuck you very much. And Alana says, Rand, you look tired, and are you getting enough rest? And kind of reaches out her hand as if to heal him and says, I mean you no harm. Nothing I will do will cause you any injury. And Rand kind of like nods and she touches his head and he feels her channeling to scan his health. And then RJ writes, and suddenly the warmth was heat and one great flash of it as if he stood for a heartbeat in the middle of a roaring furnace. Even after it passed, he felt odd, aware of himself as he never had been before, aware of Alana. He swayed, head light, muscles watery, an echo of confusion and unease rang from Luz Theron. And Rand is immediately like, what did you do? And he feels them start to try to shield him. And so he seizes Sidene and cuts them both off and shields them. And again, demands to know what they did. And Varen explains that Alana has bonded him as a warder. And Alana, with a look of contentment on her face, says, I said I would not injure you, and I've done exactly the opposite of injury. And Rand is furious and orders them both not to leave Camelin, but to stay away from him unless he sends for them. And if they disobey, he will leave them shielded and in a jail cell. And he flings open the door and sees Bodhi Cawthon talking to Bashir, who's like, this guy is saying awful things about you, Rand, like you're the Dragon Reborn. And Rand is like, yeah, I am. And the girls are like, don't be foolish. Like, don't, you shouldn't say such things, blah, 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 blah. And they start to kind of chastise him. And he kind of loses it and, you know, channels and pulls Bodhi and Lorene into the air with Sidene and starts screaming at them about how he's the Dragon Reborn and no denying it will make it not true. And is like, do you get it? And screaming. And Alana like comes up and puts her hand on his arm and is like, can you let them down? They are very scared and you're scaring them terribly. And Rand is like, realizes he has completely lost his cool and, you know, lets them down and tries to apologize and says he didn't mean to scare them. But they are too terrified to look at him and are just like sobbing and crying. And, you know, the girls are sort of like huddled around. Some of them are under tables. And Bashir says to him, like, maybe it's for the best that, you know, essentially that they're afraid of him. And the chapter wraps up with a quote that I'm just going to read. So Rand nodded slowly. It probably was best that they wanted to stay clear of him. Best for them. He just wished he could have talked a little while longer about home. A little while longer with them, seeing only Randall Thor. His knees still wobbled from the bonding, but once he began moving, he did not stop until he was back in Jadian's saddle. Best that they were afraid of him. Best that he forgot the Two Rivers. He wondered whether that mountain ever got lighter for a time or only kept getting heavier. And that is the end of the chapter. So
I cannot believe it.
Yeah. Alana bonding Rand is one of the like moments in the series that people are furious about. And I think I read ahead a little bit and it's a little bit explained more in the next chapter, but basically that this is not really a spoiler. So I'm just going to kind of like tell you in advance that basically like the tower considers bonding without consent as like akin to rape or sexual assault. And so Alana has broken a lot of customs in addition to, you know, doing something pretty intimate and pretty intimate without somebody's consent. So a lot of people absolutely despise Alana specifically for this moment.
I already didn't trust Alana.
Yeah.
Now I certainly think she's Black Aja. And first of all, I don't understand how Varen could let this happen. And I don't understand Varen's role in this because I actually trust Varen. And I really don't understand how she could be not only allowing her to bond Rand.
Yeah.
But it seems like plotting to let it happen, like being part of the plot, like getting him alone in the room and then trying to shield him. I don't understand that. That is very, like, part of me is like, oh, well, you know, Varen is trying to stay close to Alana because Alana can't be trusted. And so, you know, Varen being on the good side, like with Moiraine and Swan and their plan, wants to make sure that someone who can't be trusted and who's dangerous is like monitored by her at all times. And I imagine doing that and not giving herself up would have to be in part going with her plans and not. But that just feels way too far. You know what I mean? It feels way too far to just be like, oh, I couldn't go against it because I couldn't reveal that I was trying to protect you. Because it feels like, so there's that. And then the other thing, the bigger thing is, what now is Rand responsible for doing as a warder. Like, I understand now they're bonded, so they're going to feel each other's sort of feelings, and physical and emotional, for them, which is terrifying to me, because now Alana has, like, access to Rand.
Yeah.
And his mind and emotions, unless he could figure out some way to, some sort of trick. Like, I don't know what he's going to be able to do. Like, yeah. And now is he responsible for protecting Alana? And, like, having to protect her against all costs? Like, how is that going to work? Because I think she's Black Aja, and I think he would eventually need to defeat her. So how would he be able to do that if they're bonded? And now that is that the reason she bonded to him? I'm furious.
All of these are excellent questions that I won't answer.
It's making me really, really upset.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that Varen was in that room and just let it happen so fast. Rand, as soon as she said, nothing I do will harm you, I did not expect bonding at all, but I knew she wasn't going to heal him. I knew it. That's such clear Aes Sedai talk. Clear. Rand, come on. He let his guard down that much. Didn't Varen herself tell Rand that he needed to be careful of Alana? Or something like that? Or didn't Varen tell him, trust no Aes Sedai or something?
Moiraine said that in her letter, and I think that Varen warned Perrin, like, to be cautious around Alana. And there was a moment in the fourth book where Alana, like, reaches out to Perrin and says to him, like, I'm not so... You know, I would bond you if I could. There's a...
Yeah.
Essentially, she, like, stops herself just before she does this to Perrin.
I have a question, and I don't know if you can answer it or not. But here's the question. Black Aja, do they operate similarly to other Aja in the way that, like, if someone is Black Aja, all other people in the Black Aja know it? Like, would two people who are both in the Black Aja be able to encounter each other and not know that they're both in the Black Aja?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So Alana could be like a free agent.
She could be.
If she was Black Aja.
I think there's a moment where one of the Black Aja explains that they specifically don't... They limit how many you know just to keep everyone safe, essentially.
They did that in the chapters where they were in the same town as Nynaeve and... Elaine, I think.
Yes.
I remember that.
That sounds right.
About that. Yeah. Okay, so essentially, if I'm correct about Alana being Black Aja, I also now think, what's her name? I already thought, but Alvieran, is she the White Aja in the Tower?
Yes.
Maniac. I think she's part of it too, in addition to obviously Lanfear and her cronies. So if that's true, Lanfear and her people could be operating on their own sort of motivation, completely separate from Alvieran or Alana, who could both be in the Black Aja and not even know that they're in it.
Totally.
That's insane. Okay.
Yep.
My mind is blown. Okay. So there's all my questions. It happened so fast.
I know.
It was like, listeners, if you haven't read this chapter yet, it's so quick. It's like a sentence and it's done.
Yep.
It's not like the, like, Egwene being collared or when Nynaeve bonded Brigida. It's like, Elaine. Oh, I bonded you. See ya. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Well, next two chapters are the last ones we're doing before we do the side quests, so they better not leave me hanging like this did.
Yeah. Well, one of them... Yeah. I won't say anything. We'll get there next week.
Okay.
Well, did you know that for $0 a month, you can support our podcast simply by rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you are currently using to listen to this episode?
And did you also know that most people try a podcast because a friend recommends it? So if you are enjoying your show, which I'm sure you are if you're listening, tell some of your friends about it.
Our social media is CoolStoryPod on Instagram and CoolStoryPod1 on X. And you can email us at coolstorypod@gmail.com. We do love getting emails. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Ola. So feel free to message us. If you want to join our Discord, we can send you a link. So reach out and touch us.
I need to be touched. Recently in one of my meetings, someone said that, like, a little parable, and it was like, what does everybody need? And everybody is free and...
Touch.
And the answer they gave was a hug. And I said, I absolutely do not need a hug from everybody.
Absolutely.
No, not from everybody. No.
Goodbye. So, you can reach out and hug us, or you don't need to. But what you could do is you could join our Patreon, patreon.com/edandmatt. You get great bonus episodes where we do things like this. And then we review movies, we play games. So check it out.
Yes. And if you want, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/edandmatt. I am currently accepting donations of up to $10,000. So that I can rent an apartment in Chicago. Thank you.
I'm accepting the same donations for no particular reason, but I'm absolutely taking them. And thank you so much for listening to Cool Story.
See you next week.
Bye.